The West African country of Guinea just signed a huge mining deal. It's a $20 billion agreement to tap into one of the largest reserves of iron ore on the planet. Guinea has one of the world's poorest economies, so this is really big for them. And it's also big for China. A state-run Chinese company is one of the partners in this new venture, along with mining giant Rio Tinto. The deal is a perfect example of how China's growing demand for natural resources is driving Beijing's ever deeper involvement in Africa. Howard French has a new book on that subject. It's called China's Second Continent. French himself was a foreign correspondent for the New York Times for many years in both Africa and China. And French says the Chinese have some clear advantages in Africa.
For one, they have a publicly proclaimed attitude of not particularly caring about the internal affairs of other countries. One of the things that that means is it's not our business if the money or payments are being squandered or banked illicitly or whatever. That's simply not China's business. The United States and certain other Western countries have corrupt practices acts in place, which, although not entirely effective, do inhibit to a certain extent the freedom of Western corporations to behave in explicitly or blatantly corrupt ways. The other advantage is that China is the place where a huge piece of world global manufacturing is taking place right now. And so if we're talking primary products of cobalt or bauxite or iron or what have you, China is the premier market for those sorts of things. And so African countries, Australia or South American companies for that matter, cannot avoid looking to China to do deals for this sort of material. The final thing is that China has incredibly deep pockets at the moment. And so it can pay, you know, cash on the barrel right up front for whatever it wants. And so it's moving sort of with all three of those characteristics in tandem in Africa, very quickly trying to catch up to this long Western lead.
With this deal, which still has to get approved by Guinea's parliament, the Chinese company and Rio Tinto each get about 40%+ of mine ownership. Guinea gets less than 8%. Eventually, that could rise to 35% ownership. But the optics do make it seem like Guinea's getting a bum deal. Are they?
You know, the economics of these sorts of things are very complicated, and I'm not, to be honest, an expert in the details of contracts. What I can say is that the new president, Alpha Conde, has labored very hard with the help of international NGOs and others to sort of help pore over contract law and things like that to get the best possible deal that he can. The fact is that Guinea, being as poor and as desperate for any kind of economic stimulus that it can get, doesn't have a lot of leverage. As I said, China is the premier market for the things that Guinea can produce, and Guinea, desperately needing money, sort of had to do a deal with China. And so that doesn't leave a lot of margin for Guinea to improve the terms.
That scene in the restaurant in Conakry, what's interesting is that there are two generations, two different generations of Chinese and how they deal with Guineans, with Africa, I guess. I mean, one's kind of old school, the other's quite young and tuned into Guinean culture and how to speak French properly. The Chinese have kind of grown with Africa, haven't they, at least in the last 10 years?
So you've put your finger on one of the reasons why I like that scene so much. It really reflects the nature of China's cultural investment in doing business in Africa. Official China has realized that in order to catch up, as we've been talking about, with the West, which is very entrenched in all of these places, that it has to be savvy. And this means not just speaking English and going everywhere speaking English poorly, but speaking English, French, Portuguese, whatever the colonial national language is in the place, very well, and sort of knowing what the local tastes are like and being able to sort of roll with that. And it just struck me as being a real example of newly acquired finesse by the Chinese.
So how much does China's economic expansion in Africa, how much does that concern Washington?
Washington, in the form of or in the person of people like Hillary Clinton and other senior officials over the last 2-3 years, has made a number of statements that clearly reflect a belated state of alarm that more or less for the last 10, 15, even 20 years, the United States and the West have sort of been sleeping on Africa. There's been immense change in Africa. Markets are opening up. Middle classes are growing. Economic growth is taking off in lots of places. And the Americans have just not terribly been present, economically speaking. And so Clinton, as Secretary of State, made a tour of Africa in which she went around essentially lecturing people to be wary of China and to remember who your real friends are, to paraphrase her. This didn't go over terribly well, I must say, in many of the places where I traveled.
Journalist Howard French, author of the just-published China's Second Continent, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Marco.